Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining us on today's show, you know, I make a lot of jokes all the time. The shows are usually pretty lighthearted and funny. I tried to be funny during this episode a few times. I don't know if it worked or not worked. I guess you'll determine that. But it's a serious subject. Obviously, I'm not the first person to talk about gun violence in this country. It is insane, although I found out today that it is not nearly as insane as South Africa, which is apparently like 60... Well, Sonny, the CEO of our guest, Aegis AI, will talk about this, but it's like 60 kills per 100,000 population people of South, which is just nuts. But anyway, the epidemic of people shooting is like a weekly, sometimes a daily story. It's very sad and unfortunate. And, you know, I don't try to get into political stuff unless I'm just making fun of Trump. But in this case, I just think that, like, the conversation around gun violence is so asinine and lost, and it makes no sense to me. Every solution from the bionic trigger that lets me know whether or not I'm the proper owner of the gun doesn't solve anything except for, yes, potentially accidental gunshots in the house, but like, what happens if you're an intruder coming and the reason you have the gun is to defend yourself and I don't know, your finger, you got fucking gloves on. I don't know, whatever. Like, it just didn't work. Like, that's not a solution. And also, by the way, that's not a solution to stopping gun violence that's in, like, a public space. And all it does, along with every other potential solution, is bring in the politics to be like, left side versus right side. Right side says you're taking away my rights. I have the rights to be an asshole with guns and shoot people. And that is just stupid. You can't solve problems when people put barriers up. And in my personal, humble opinion in this case, the government is compromised. You took money from people who make guns. So therefore, you are incentivized not to do that. You would think all of us taxpayers are paying you to protect us. And that should be an incentive, given that we give you more money than the lobbyists do. I know this because I look at my check stub. But apparently it's not. The gun lobbyists are the winners here. And so what I love about tech is that in every different vertical, there is, for better or for worse, there is a solution that basically circumvents all of the political and otherwise controlled areas. And this case is no different. Aegis AI founders Sonny and Ben join me here and talk about this amazing sort of workaround. They use existing security cameras. And the security cameras are basically have AI written on top of it. And if a person whips out a gun, the artificial intelligence can use the learning algorithm that has been put in it to identify that this is a handgun or a gun of any sort or a threat, if you will. And it takes that frame and it puts it to the top and it sends an alert to the property manager, to the authorities or whomever the user wants and says, on level floor, sector D, next to Marshall's, some assholes pulled a gun, and they are a violent threat that needs putting down. And a frame of that person with a square around the gun is sent directly to the property manager, who can determine if they need to alert authorities immediately. And here's where stuff gets really interesting. The authorities themselves are going to be able to identify a person with a gun, where they're at, doing what they're doing right now. So the intel is live. It is real. It is verified. So they can go out and not walk into a blind fire where they don't know who is a friend and who is a foe. They don't know what the magnitude of the situation is. They don't know casualties. In this case, they know what's going on. And I think it's a huge, huge, huge solution to this problem. But I also think it's a huge, huge, huge way to get the people and the talking heads out of the equation and just start stopping assholes from shooting innocent people. So that is a serious note and a serious show that we have here, but that does not mean that we still don't have a little bit of fun. So before we hit off and bring Sonny and Ben into the program, we have got to do our startup inbox. The startup inbox is brought to you by Active Campaign. They are partners of ours now. We use them for CRM. We use them for automated marketing. We use them for managing dashboard on social. We use them for everything. And you can too. You can go to activecampaign.com/technori and save the first and second month of your subscription and check it out. And Jason, the CEO, who we just unleashed the podcast today, was on the show last week. He offered to all the founders who come on this show a full year of using Active Campaign for being an awesome startup company on Technori, which is amazing. So, huge friend of the program, And obviously, we want to send you to ActiveCampaign if, in fact, you need CRM or automated marketing. With that said, we've got a really interesting and good question that came in from Jude C. I don't know if he wanted me to say his last name or not, so I'm going to say not. Had a branding and a domain question. He emailed us and said, when we're rebranding our website, it's a B2B site. Is it better to go with, in his case, it's getflamingo.com or flamingo.us? There are better options for, is there a better option for leading people to eventually to a dashboard? And that would be, you know, longer. And what are my thoughts? And if you boil this down, the question really is .com or dot something else. And my answer to this is, in almost every case, if there's any B to C or C involved anywhere in this, that you've got to look at the .com, because I learned this firsthand. A lot of the random domains other than .co, for the most part, will get flagged in a lot of businesses' web security. So if you're needing mass adoption, I think that's a problem. The second part of this is the length of domain. So if you are in fact going to have dashboard.getflamingo.com, that's a lot. So you might want to consider maybe a different piece there. But ultimately, and there's a lot of people on this subject who can talk about it, I've bought and sold hundreds of domains. I always revert to Thomas K. Stovall, I'm Black in Tech, Get Candid. He's bought, it's like 10,000 domains. Like, the dude spends thousands of dollars a month on just domains, just on the keeping the domains. And I just think that in general, we feel like we answered this problem a while ago. We got the .co and there's alternative domain endings, but in the reality, it really doesn't solve the problem. If you can get .com, get .com. And if you can do get whatever your URL is supposed to be .com until you've got enough money to buy that URL that you want, I think that's the route to go. The, get, go, something like that. Don't switch to another domain, because getting people away from .me to go to .com is a strange, weird kind of challenge. But here's the last thing I want to end on with this, before we get to the interview. You've got to ask yourself a branding question. If you're not able to get .com because some asshole is sitting on it and squatting on it, then I think that, you know, that is what it is. You should get the get version of gettechnori.com instead of, and when Technori is available, then buy it. If in your case, it's being held by someone who is not only using the domain, but is a powerful force, I think you need to reconsider branding it. And I think you got to really reconsider whether or not you got there fast enough. If somebody else has your domain and got market traction faster, I think you're better off just getting a new domain. I think, you know, I don't want to tell you to rebrand the whole company, but I really think that that's something you should consider. So, Jude, thank you for the question. Hopefully that was helpful. This is my conversation. Oh, before I do that, I got to tell you where to go. Technori.com, of course. If you want to follow or you want to email people and get these questions right on the air, you just go to technori.com. In the little bottom right-hand corner, there's a little green thing. It takes you to Facebook. Just click on it, and you can write the message right there. You can ask us right there. And by the way, while you're at technori.com, you know, go ahead and subscribe to the newsletter and go to our events and things free. That's just my 2 cents. Now, really, though, here we go. I'm going to bring in CEO, founder, co-founder, Sunny Tai, and Ben Jomek from Aegis AI. Obviously, it's not a secret that there's been a lot of shootings and a lot of different things, and this is a different sort of feel to show. I think we'll warm up. I hope we'll warm up. The show normally starts off with some humor, and there's sort of like a lot of joking around and banter, but this is a topic that like is serious, and the only joking I can make is just how utterly stupid a lot of people in this country treat violence and gun violence in particular, and how, for whatever reason, and I know that, I mean, I don't want to get political. I know all of the reasons why the NRA has so much money that they're spending on all this stuff, but like how common sense has gotten away from the fact that, like, if this were any other epidemic, you would just be like, oh, let's just get rid of these, or let's do anything to stop it. And this is one where it's like, you know, I'm going to blame the human here. It's not the human is the problem. You know, not the gun. We don't need to give them 52 bullets to fire at people, and so it's a real problem. And you guys at Aegis are really, like, I think, at the forefront of using a potential solution and using technology in a way that is, in my mind, actually potentially game changing. There's all kinds of data and things on like how to make it quicker to be approved or not approved. There's all kinds of stuff around how to get guns and how to monitor it and how to check for whatever. But the laws prohibit those things being enacted. Laws prohibit you doing background checks unless they're not. You know, there's rules around it. Mm-hmm. The minute you walk into a room, security footage, you know, I can do what I want with this. Mm-hmm. You know immediately mm-hmm. that the camera, you are in my home, my domain, yep. my building, and you're up to my rules. Mm-hmm. And so you guys are creating something, I think, that ultimately allows people to control whether or not we want to protect ourselves without the need of government or any of the influences, good or bad, depending on your side. Mm-hmm. So I want to start this conversation out with this sort of this piece of like, obviously you were going to explain how the technology works and what it does, yep. but like, what was it that made you realize that in order for us to do anything to prevent these violent acts, that we needed to do something different?
Yes. So I've actually had a lifelong passion for the issue of gun violence. I just never really knew what it was that we could actually do about it. And the reason why I had this lifelong passion is because I actually grew up in South Africa. And I don't know if the audience knows that much about South Africa or have been as a tourist and whatnot, but South Africa routinely ranks in the top 10 of the world in terms of homicides per capita.
Wow.
So,
I did not know that.
Yeah. So actually, I looked it up recently, and Johannesburg actually has 60 homicides per capita. Sorry, 60 homicides per 100,000 compared yeah. to the United States, which has 4. So it's basically, wow. you know, 15x. So that's the environment that I grew up in. My biggest fear growing up was a home intrusion, because we had family friends who had their houses broken into. We had family friends who were robbed at gunpoint, carjacked, and a straw that broke the camel's back was when one of our family friends was fatally shot in his own home. And my mom decided that we're going to leave South Africa, we're going to come to a safer country, and we're going to come to the United States. So my mom took an H-1B visa that paid a job sponsored by H-1B visa that paid $12 an hour. We immigrated to the United States. And obviously, the United States is a much safer country than South Africa is, but we have a mass shooting issue. And every time I would see these mass shootings, it would break my heart, and I would feel so powerless. I have no idea what it is that we can actually do about it. So it was really last year the trigger was the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history, the Las Vegas shooting. I wanted to see, you know, how can we use technology to save lives during these active shooter incidents? So I had no idea where to start. I attended a training called Run, Hide, Fight. And that's when teachers are taught to evacuate their students and resist if necessary during these active shooter drills. And I was engaging with the instructor, who's a career law enforcement officer. And he said, you know what? I wish all of the security cameras we have deployed at this high school can automatically recognize guns and notify the police. That'll be extremely helpful. So I thought, well, you know, based on research I've done, computer vision algorithms are increasingly more accurate than human beings as long as you train them on the right data set. I've seen academic research papers that theorize that what we're doing right now is possible, but nobody was doing it.
Yeah.
So feel free to chime in anytime if I'm being too
verbose. No, you're not. I mean, I'm trying to like build the line on here a little bit on like what exactly drove you to this. Obviously, I think it's very interesting that you've got, you know, a true, like it affected you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously the things that we're looking at affected everybody with regard to the Vegas thing. Like, I mean, all of these things affect mm-hmm. us. But the problem in this country is there's just so much shit going on that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this. We're going to change. Oh, is that a kitty cat? And then they're like, oh, play on Instagram and it's over. And then like nothing's done. And that's why I said to you before when you started the show, the only way that this truly is going to work is if we really take a circumventing approach. We circumvent all of the people and the things that are trying to stop this from being successful. Mm-hmm. That's the part of this that I think ultimately is the only change that we're going to have a chance to do. You saw a little bit of it mm-hmm. with the kids going off and like starting their own group and doing all these things.
Yep.
But like in the end, the only reason that they could do it and others have not been able to do it is because they were children, right? Mm-hmm. Like otherwise you get stopped. Yeah. They're kids, so they can do whatever. You can't say like, well, I guess some assholes can, but kids can't be in a situation where you're like, that stupid kid, like what, you got shot at. Like it's a funny place.
There are people doing that, believe it or not.
No, I know. That's the insane thing, right? Mm-hmm. But like as a whole, the average Joe is not going to rip a kid down. So like the only, in my mind, the only way to really solve this problem is to create technology and it doesn't have to be technology, but in this case it is, create something that sort of allows us to circumvent the political bureaucracy, right? And that's what you've really accomplished there.
Definitely. And I think the one thing that we need to be careful about in this discussion is really that question of solving. So gun violence is a really, really complex issue. Yep. And we built Aegis from the perspective that there's no one solution to this. Like, as you've just spent a while talking about, this is so entrenched in American culture that there's no silver bullet.
Yeah.
So what we've done is...
as evidenced by the fact that you used silver bullet as an analogy.
Yeah, exactly. So what we are doing is we took a look at that massive problem and said, what is the issue? The issue here is that people have no way to defend themselves and people are dying. And we looked at what is the most solvable aspect of that outcome that we can have an impact on. And really it is the time it takes for help to come. So if you're in an active shooter situation, your first priority, very rightfully, is to get to safety.
Yep.
That means that it takes 5 to 10 minutes for the first 911 calls to come in. Police are great. They respond very quickly. But just due to that lag, they arrive after the event is finished 60% of the time.
Yep.
So what we are doing is closing that loop and making it so that law enforcement can come and dramatically decrease the impact of gun violence events. This isn't a solution, unfortunately.
I don't think there's a solution to... You can't stop people from committing heinous acts of violence. Even with the guns gone, there's still other. Now, granted, I don't want to get into like the measurement of impact because guns, whatever, automatic rifle, semi-automatic rifle, pistol, knife, you can cause harm regardless. So my question to you guys on this, you know, just from a technology standpoint is, you know, if I have an office and I'm saying in my office basically, or my building or whatever the case may be, I'm saying basically that you can't come into my building with a gun. Don't care if you have a permit. You're not allowed. There's no weapons allowed in here. So from that standpoint on, you are at least 100% covered in the right that like law enforcement can issue a violation or whatever if you are a permit carrying gun holder who happened to come into my place without it. The challenge is, I'm assuming now that like you're sending a notification to law enforcement saying that they're our camera detected that there's a thing.
We leave it up to the building management.
Manager can tell.
The manager does it. And the use case you outlined is definitely really interesting, and we've had discussions about this, we really see the main use case of being in situations where there is truly a bad actor. Like not someone with a concealed carry permit, but somebody who pulls a weapon with the intent on causing
harm. The camera identifies that the weapon is pulled. This isn't like not seeing like, you know, dude walks in like the Duke with a gun on the side. Like that's not the issue. That would obviously be a good... That would be good.
If it's visible to a trained human, we can spot it instantly.
Okay.
So we're at like less than half a second latency from when we get the image to when we can send
out. And does that go to building management or does that go to police?
It's up to building management to make the decision for like liability and management reasons.
Okay. Yep.
And one thing I'd like to highlight is based on research that we've done early on when we were starting this company, in terms of law enforcement response, the reason why law enforcement response is often so delayed, besides the fact that it takes several minutes for first 911 calls to even be made in many situations, is not because they're stuck in traffic. It's because they would arrive on scene and they have no idea what the situation is. If you have a large building and you have no idea where the shooter is, what he's armed with, how many shooters are, is the shooter wearing body armor, what the shooter even looks like, you're really at a significant disadvantage in terms of response.
When I saw what you guys were doing, that was the thing that stuck out to me is, number one was like, this is a way, just as I'm a person who tries to short circuit everything. Yep. So when I looked at this, I'm thinking, really quick way to cut out all the BS and get right to actually trying to solve problems. We talked about that. The next thing that came in my mind when I thought about this was really picking up speed on the on the process of putting out the fire, so to speak. And I'm looking at this going like, if you look at any, we just had the one in Louisiana. You look at the shooting that takes place with the gunman guns down a bunch of innocent people, and then they take off and they're piling quickly in panic mode, both trying to find the person, but also going back into camera footage and try to figure out like, who is this person? What do they look like? And then they're confirming that against other people, witnesses saying it was this person, that person.
Exactly.
And then that doesn't even count the fact that, to your point, the police are showing up. Now, granted, it's a little different now because it's so commonplace that police usually SWAT is different, but like police are showing up usually 12 gauge M4 in trunk, armed.
Yep.
You know, it's a little different. But I would think if I was a policeman or anyone who's going to go into the line of fire, I would really like to know what I'm going into.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, as a former Marine Corps officer, you know, I've shot an M9 pistol.
Yep.
I've shot the M4 and M16.
Yep.
And the effectiveness of the AR-15 type of rifle compared to someone with a sidearm is like night and day. You do not want to go to battle with a sidearm when your enemy has an M4.
No, and if they're wearing body armor, I mean, the M4, depending on what, if you're wearing like 680 yep. ball or whatever, you're going to rip right through the vest. Not that I would, I've done any research on this. But no, I mean, like, and so like the reason that I also find this interesting, so I, first off, you know, thank you for being a service member. We obviously appreciate that.
Thank you for free business school as a loyal taxpayer.
Boom. That's listen, this is totally off topic, but on the way in today, I was listening to Mark Maron's podcast, and he was interviewing Aaron Sorkin, whose father was a World War II veteran.
Wow.
And got his college and his law school paid for. And he talked about, specifically to this point, totally off mm-hmm. topic, about the value of the taxpayer's investment in our troops. And when they come back, he said specifically, if you look at the investment that was made in my father, it netted 5 children who are now lawyers, who have 7 mm-hmm. grandchildren, all of which are working full time and are U.S. citizens paying taxes. So the investment that people yep. bitch and moan about not paying veterans and not taking care of people is complete BS, because if they give you the money to do something great, this is what can happen.
Well, I am, as an immigrant, immigrated to the United States when I was 13 years old. I am eternally grateful for what the American people have done for me. I'm eternally grateful for the opportunities the United States government has provided to me, and it will take me an entire lifetime to be able to pay it forward. So this is one great way to jumpstart it, though,
because this is so. Like, I would say the, I don't even want to touch the drug thing, because that's a whole nother bullshit line. But like, in reality, this is the epidemic of our time. This is the one thing that is, while it's not killing people in the hundreds of thousands like cancer, it is ripping children and people away from their families and destroying families across this country, and no one is doing anything. And I, as I said in the beginning, I don't think anyone can, because the government is not vested in that.
Yeah, and the difference with cancer is we can plausibly claim that we're doing everything
yes.
humanly possible to solve that problem. We're pouring hundreds of billions of dollars, not just from
yeah.
the private sector, but also from United States government, world governments, to try to eliminate this threat. But with gun violence in the United States, it's so politically fraught, as you mentioned.
Yes.
It's so polarized. Nobody can seem to agree on what the actual solution is. And that's why Ben and I and our team came together, because we have this passion for this issue, but we want to sidestep the political debate and develop a cost-effective, non-intrusive, reliable means of mitigating the threat that people on the right and people on the left can all agree on. We actually have advisors and investors who own hundreds of guns
yeah.
because they're collectors, and they feel like this is a solution that can save lives but doesn't infringe on your Second Amendment rights.
So I want to play this devil's advocate on this, and there's a specific reason for this, because I really hope that this show ultimately gets shared with people, and they like, because there's like a long silence that should happen after I pitch to you and say what this is. When I say to you, I'm not taking away your rights, I'm just going to alert authorities if you're an asshole and you pull your gun out. Okay? That's what I'm going to do. So I'm not taking your rights yep. away. You can still own the gun. Just don't bring it in here and do harm. You're fine. And there should be a long silence that the other side has when they're like, looking for a rebuttal. And I'm just going to play this, because I'm looking at it like, I am a gun owner. I have several guns, handguns. You just happened to mention my arsenal, the M9 and the M4. Those are two of the guns that I have. They're not collector guns. They're for fun.
Yep.
I like to go out to shooting range in mm-hmm. Iowa, and I just go bananas, and I have yep. a great time with it. And I am also on the left.
Mm-hmm.
I vote on the left.
Yep.
Not all the time, but most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's absolutely asinine that anyone at any time can go and buy the same guns, because I have no interest or mm-hmm. intention to use them in any sort of way that is malice or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at what you're doing, and I'm going, the only argument I could see people on the right saying is privacy. Oh, you're using cameras, blah, 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 blah. And then they try to paint it in this direction. And the reality is the cameras already exist, and you're on security
yes,
footage
correct.
And like nothing changed.
Like when we talk to like our supporters who own many, many weapons, there's not really a rebuttal. And this is something we've been very happy about, is their thoughts immediately go to, even if I'm in a situation where I have a concealed carry permit and I feel the need to defend myself, I pull a weapon, the police are coming to back me up.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened.
Well, so you just brought up a whole nother side of this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, again, I have to like preface every one of these things by saying I don't want to get into the political side of this, but like this, let's assume... Bear with me. Let's assume that everyone was doing right in Chicago police when they shot the security guard. Let's just assume for a minute that this is not another bad story. But in most cases, the Good Samaritan can end up being the first one down because they were trying to do right and no one identified. And in your case, and I don't know that your tech is there yet, but it will get to a point where undoubtedly where you can identify good threat, bad threat, and or at least identify that there are two people and that one of them is attacking others and one is not. Mm-hmm. And send the police in with the most intel possible so that there's no mistaken
shot. I think that idea of intent and human context is a very, very challenging problem to solve. We do have a few ideas in the works, but one of the foundations of our technology is it's really the people who understand the environment, who manage the building or the school or the office or whatever, that are the ones making that decision. Yeah. So while we are definitely going to be looking for ways to equip them with more knowledge, it's really up to the person who's responsible for that space.
But in time, but to your point, like in time, you're going to learn. And it's not like you can't, this isn't, what's the Minority Report? This isn't like where they just drop from the sky and grab you. So like when I look at what you're doing, I'm thinking I can immediately identify whether this is a shooter or active shooter. And I know that they call active shooter everything, but like one is actively in the process of shooting. And the other one is in sector D of floor 4, isolated, not doing anything, but has a gun out. And so when police come, they can say, person, unidentified person, drop your effing gun and you're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Active shooter who is currently shooting people, put that person down.
Yes.
Yep. And I think that that is a, I mean, you were from the military, so you know this. What military, and by no stretch of the imagination, engaging an active shooter is more or less, it's terrorism. I mean, it's basically domestic terrorism.
Yep.
What operation would you want to go into without intel? Like,
you always want to have as much information as possible. It's not always possible, but good thing is, in the United States, most organizations that we've engaged with already have that infrastructure. Something like 90% of schools in the United States have some semblance of security camera infrastructure, and those are statistics from U.S. Department of Education. So even though the infrastructure is there, the challenge is that it's basically impossible to monitor all of these cameras. So they just sit there and record. If there's vandalism, if there's theft, if there's a robbery, or God forbid there's a shooting, they go back and review the footage. So with that said, what we do is we take that friction out of the loop by allowing the active monitoring of cameras in a resource-efficient way. So AI pretty much just strips out 99.99% of all the frames where nothing's going on and surfaces the top priority, top threat frames for a human being to then analyze and immediately provides information to security forces or law enforcement.
Perfect. How do people go and actually go after and use this product?
Yeah, definitely. So our mantra is that we notify you of threats however you want, whenever you want, to whoever you want.
Yep.
So right now, most of our customers prefer to get the alert on their phones in the form of a text message that then has a link to an app that shows you the frame with a box drawn around the gun and allows you to notify authorities. We're going to be integrating with building security, whatever you want, to kick off your existing emergency plans as quickly as possible.
That's awesome.
And one thing I'd like to go back to that you mentioned earlier and connects to what Sunny said as well is one of the things that was really important for me in starting this company is, well, I was at Microsoft for a number of years before we dealt with privacy, compliance, all these concerns. And as I started looking into a lot of AI, things like facial recognition are pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of privacy, a lot of personally identifiable information. And one of the things that is a priority for us as we build this out is providing all of this threat monitoring, all of the security, real-time intelligence without infringing on anybody's privacy. As you noted, the cameras are already there. We store no customer data unless a gun is detected. Yep. We don't analyze anybody's facial features, nothing. And we feel we can actually provide a higher level of security because at the end of the day, most people who commit mass shootings were supposed to be in the office or the school, which is an unfortunate fact.
No, I totally agree. I think this is a very, very interesting approach to this solution, because I think it's the one that, I don't want to say it's above reproach, because there's obviously things that you can point out that could be flaws or whatever.
Yeah.
But like in reality, it is the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. And I think we've gotten to a point in this country where if we want to address this situation, we're going to have to do so without the help of the government, because they are compromised, to say the least. So I appreciate you guys coming in and sharing this. Looking forward to learning more about it and watch your guys' journey and see how things go for you. But before I let you guys go, I think we got to do a little startup showcase.
For sure.
If you guys can grab your headphones, what we are going to do is we're going to listen to a company called Roe Vigor. They're in the process of raising money on microventures.com, which enables the audience of people, all of you listeners, can invest as little as, I think it's $100 with them and help them raise some money. And it's, in my mind, is a really, really good way to not just get money raised, but also like get customer validation and, yep, and get some active customers. So, we are going to take our pitch right meow.
Roe Vigor is a hardware-agnostic fitness technology company, and it's our goal to democratize the fitness experience by making live and interactive fitness available to more people. And the way that we do that is through connection. So we are able to connect to legacy equipment via a special device that we're developing called the Vigor Connect device. And we have started in this industry with rowing. So if you're familiar with Peloton and what they've done in the market, getting a $4 billion valuation, we've taken that, decoupled the hardware from the software, and allowed users to get the same live and interactive experience with any machine that they have access to.
Okay, did you get the gist of this? So he mentioned Peloton in the pitch here. Peloton, obviously, everybody kind of knows Peloton at this point, but like it's the bike or the treadmill now, and then they've got software that basically pairs with it to make it a better experience, but they've just unleashed a new thing where you don't even need the bike, you can just have the software. It's not as good of experience, but it's still the same. If you are a person who is an exercise person into rowing, which I like rowing, that's my favorite, I guess, cardio that I really don't do as it is apparent by my body, but I should do more of it. And one of the reasons I don't is there's no good apps for it. So for me, I said to him on the show when he called, I think this could be really, really interesting so long as it's not a standalone app that I have to do another app for. If I can run it in the background and run that activity into my activity app or my Fitbit app and it's just all into it, I'm interested, but if it's another app, I think it's a challenge, and there's a shit ton of those out there. What do you guys think?
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, full transparency, I did work at a VC here in Chicago and did some work with Microsoft Ventures. I'm much more of an enterprise guy, so not my forte, but my gut reaction is exactly what you said. Like Peloton's huge. Gym I go to has built-in bikes that are similar. Like people love this. My wife likes to bike around and play video games at the same time. But as you also noted, there's already apps that do this in a standalone fashion, and it's a really okay experience. And so what it sounds like they're trying to do is combine the app with something that plugs into any machine, and I think that's really the crux of it. Like, these fitness machines are pretty much commodity hardware, but that means the chips involved are probably low quality. They're not made for expandability. And like, even in our company, we have to connect to a dozen different systems. That's a pain in the ass. And I would wonder how capable they are and how accessible these machines are to really make the vision happen.
My challenge that I had with him was, and I don't mean challenge like problem, I mean like I challenged him on, was that the Apple Watch, and in my case the Fitbit Flex, if you're able to use the data that is being pulled from that, which they're able to basically identify elliptical versus running versus weightlifting after a consistent amount of time being used, if you're able to do that with what data is already there, you got to win, because they don't have rower. They don't have that identifiable. If you refine that and make it good, then they'll buy you and they'll plug that into theirs and it's over. If so, you don't, though, problems.
Yeah, so I am a huge, huge fitness buff. And one thing I love the
most... You look very fit, by the way.
Thank you so much. I try to. So one thing I loved when I attended undergrad at the University of Illinois is the gyms, they had these bicycles where you had a screen, and it was almost a... It was a game, actually, where you raced against other people. It was kind of janky, but...
Yeah, I remember this. I did the same thing. I know exactly what you're talking
about. And it stoked the competitive spirit.
Aztec game. You remember the Aztec game? It was
I think that was one of the maps, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one of the maps you could play, but you could have other people on it, and it was like a race to push the ball through the hole.
That was a ton of fun. Now, that stokes the competitive spirit in you and makes cardio less miserable.
Yes.
So I'm one of those guys that, like, especially, I think a lot of guys are like this. We loved bench press day is the best day of the week. We love to go bench. We want to see when are we going to be able to crush three plates, right? Cardio day is brutal.
Crush like, three plates. Oh, geez.
You know, I got to go do cardio.
Yeah. I don't run unless I'm being chased.
Exactly. That's exactly. My deal. And that's where classes like, you know, was a flywheel, core power yoga. Yeah. I do those because I can be in a room with other people and be competitive. When I go into flywheel, I'll see a leaderboard. I'll try to be number one. Yeah. I'm almost never number one because there's always really fit cyclists in there.
Yeah.
But if you have an app where you gamify it and you make people feel like they're competing against other people,
yep,
I think that's a winner. Even if you don't have the data behind it, because you'll get users and people will use it.
Yeah. I think the funny part about rowing versus every one of these other things, it's just unique. And I don't know if there's is even worth the investment. It's one of those things that are like really cool, but is it even worth chasing it? Mm-hmm. Is that AR is basically the only place where I think rowing is really like appropriate. Like running is different. Like you're running, you focus on like a long distance, mm-hmm, and you try to make your way through it. There's no, there is experiential, but it has to be exceptional for it to matter in running. I'm a runner, I'm going to run. But if I am going to do rowing goes like this. You look around. You're like yep, you hear the water. Like there's a play.
Yeah, I think the best comparison for this is something called Strava. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not.
So it's like a really basic AR level on top of cycling. So you have your little bike computer,
okay,
and everywhere you go, like there's 500 meter to kilometer segments on every bike path in the world that you're racing other people who've been there.
Yep.
So everywhere you go, you're racing real people. And there's that global leaderboard for literally every street in the world. So I knew people when I lived in Seattle who would try and like beast the bridge every day and just bike back and forth trying to get that, what do they call it, King of the Hill.
Yes. Wow. And they had a lot of time on their hands, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, I used to commute over the bridge too, so don't think too much.
Rest investors.
Yeah. That's so true. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for the input on that. Like I said, for those of you out there listening, you can check them out. They're on microventures.com. Just go to microventures and you'll scroll until you find Rowvigor. They're raising money. I think they've got another 20 or so days left of the campaign. And if you're into rowing, I am into any solutions that will make the experience better. The normal like little things that are on the rowers themselves suck, and I it's just not doing it for me. So I'm definitely down for that. I have my questions with regard to like a very saturated space, and it's sort of like the wearable argument from a few years ago. Like unless you're able to make this experience exceptionally different, mm-hmm, from what it was before, marginal improvements are not gonna make it. But that's just my feelings on it. You guys, I really appreciate not only coming in to do this, but what you're doing, I think, is really important and also really novel. So the best of luck to you guys for that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. It's an honor.
Of course, absolutely. You can learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities, and check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify. Follow us on social at Technori. You can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.